Kia and welcome back to System Fix, a podcast from the health media. My name is Barbara Fountain and I am editor of New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa. Each episode of System Fix, we take a look at progress with reforms proposed for the New Zealand health system. These arose from the report of the Health and Disability System Review Panel, aka the Simpson Report. However, they have been significantly revved up by Health Minister Andrew Little to become what I like to call the Big Little Revolution. On System Fix, I speak with regular panellists and invited guests about the changes, the highs, the lows, what's happened to date, and what we might expect. Thanks for joining me. Kia ora koutou, listeners, and welcome to System Fix. I'm recording here in Auckland, where we're in our seventh week of lockdown. Since our last episode, we've had some big news. The announcement of the interim boards of the Māori Health Authority and Health New Zealand, with the Māori Health Authority to be co-chaired by Sharon Shea, Ngāti Ranganui, Ngāti Hoa, Ngāti Hine, Ngāti Hako, and Tipa Mahuta, Waikato, Maniapoto, Me, Ngāpuhi. The interim Health NZ chair is Rob Campbell, a slight fly in the ointment being Mr. Campbell's chairmanship of Sky City, creating echoes of when Food and Grocery Council Chief Executive Catherine Rich was appointed to the board of the Health Promotion Agency. Sharon Shea, currently acting chair of Bay of Plenty DHB and a member of the Māori Expert Advisory Group of the Health and Disability System Review Panel, which produced the report on which the reforms are based, has a seat on the Health NZ board as well as being co-chair of the Māori Health Authority. Both agencies are recruiting chief executives. We're waiting on a plan for disability services, though rumour has it the enabling good lives model is being embraced and possibly a new standalone agency. We're awaiting a strategy for Pacific people. And according to Health Minister Andrew Little, the legislation for the health reforms is due early to mid-October. In the area of public health, Simon Everett was appointed as director of the Public Health Agency establishment. As you recall, the Public Health Agency is to sit inside the Ministry of Health, while the current regional public health services will sit inside Health NZ. And a third entity, an independent public health advisory committee, will provide independent advice to the minister. The transition unit has been out and about talking to folk in the sector. Hui have been held, often virtually, to discuss iwi Māori partnership boards and more, and work continues on a health charter and a health plan. Work also continues on localities after discovery phase in which the transition unit reached out to the primary and community sector to determine what it does well and what it would like to do. And lastly, a new website, futureofhealth.govt.nz. And all the while, the COVID pandemic rumbles on. Joining me today are two people who can totally fill us in on progress with reforms, Stephen McKernan, director of the transition unit, beaming in from a suburb in Auckland, and Martin Heffer, Deputy Director of the Transition Unit, beaming in from Wellington. Kia ora to you both.
Kia ora, Barbara. Nice to be here.
Kia ora.
Stephen, it's been a big lead up to this meeting, but I want to go back to the beginning. When you were asked to take on the role of leading the Transition Unit, what was the first significant challenge that you identified?
Well, the first one was a bit of an oh my God moment, really. How are we going to approach this? And I guess getting clarity from government around the mandate and size and scope of what was being proposed. At that time, we actually only met once with ministers before the election of last year. So we had some 8 or 10 weeks before we then had another conversation with the government that was elected, being the Labour government. And so during that time, it was a relatively small team that was put together, but we did a number of things. And I guess to wear a policy hat, we took a pretty pure policy approach, actually, looking at the problems that the Health and Disability Review highlighted. We looked at the desired outcomes that were looking to be achieved by government, given that they had accepted the case for change, but they hadn't accepted all those review recommendations. But, you know, the desire to achieve equity, a more sustainable system, more patient-centred, a system that focused on partnership, excellence, whether they be outcomes, whether they be the spread and transfer of innovation, these were important things. And we then, I guess, had a framework where we knew there would need to be a number of system shifts, and they were identified in the CAB paper. We agreed a set of principles, collaboration, accountability, you know, an increased focus on population health, the need to tailor services and so on. And then I guess we focused on the functions. And I get the point I'd be keen to make is we never went to institutions. We never talked about the number of district health boards. or what was a PHO. We looked at what are the functions and the placement of functions up and down the system in order to come up with a system that would better deliver on the problem definition. And so that's what I'd be keen to emphasize. It was really a pure policy approach. And then we worked through with government a range of options that were available to better deliver on that. And that was the, I guess, the work at the end of last year, and that then culminated in the cabinet paper in early this year and the subsequent announcements. But the point I'd be really keen to stress is, you know, it's the form versus function thing. We really focused on what were the functions that would be best placed across the system, localities, districts, regions, and at a national level, in order to better deliver on the problem definition.
Mm-hmm. And most of our listeners will be really familiar with the structure that you have come up with. Mm-hmm. And one area that has been raised with me a number of times, and I understand what they're talking about with regard to the localities, and Martin, you might want to answer this question, but I still kind of remain skeptical about a structure where the localities are in a separate line of accountability and funding to the local hospitals at that really fundamental locality level. I feel like this kind of discourages integrated care and collaboration, because one of the things that was identified in the Simpson report was the need to change the culture so that people felt like they were part of one system. And I think wherever we have, say, you know, two different agencies working in the same area and potentially getting different funding streams, that there's a problem there. I don't know which of you would like to address that one.
Yeah, I'll start. In terms of Health NZ, which will have both commissioning and provision functions as district health boards do, the point I'd be keen to make is that both those commissioning and provision functions sit inside Health NZ. And if we look at integration, yes, we've made some headway around integration of services within some district health boards, but often it's more between primary care and core specialist services. Perhaps made less integration around how we integrate around population groups. So maternity, primary care, well child, for example, in the early years, or frail elderly, age residential care, links with home-based support services and primary care. And so, you know, what we would be proposing through the locality strategy is how we better integrate services, including specialist services, into these locality models. And remember that it's all part of Health NZ. We're not creating two separate entities, being a commissioning entity and a hospital provision entity. It's a single entity. And like within districts, these people could be sitting as part of the same corridor and building. If you go to your Northlands or your Wanganui's, for example. So we'd be keen to emphasise that. I guess the critical component in terms of a separate entity is the Māori Health Authority. But as we've looked to design this system, the role and the powers and the way the Māori Health Authority and Health NZ will work together to set priorities, to agree locality plans, is a key feature that will bind them together through the system. The New Zealand Health Plan will be a document that they will both sign off on, and that will very much set, for example, the direction and priorities for the system over a multi-year period.
I guess I would also just point out that having a little bit of distance between the management of day-to-day hospital operations and the kind of commissioning of primary and community services is intended to allow better focus on both of those activities. And what we've seen is that if you don't have a bit of separation, then it's very easy for the hospital day-to-day operations to swamp the ability to do more strategic commissioning, long-term planning, and to focus on the integration. So yes, they'll all be working under the same NZ Health Plan priorities and strategies, and they're all part of the same entity, but we do want to keep a strong focus on both activities and not have one swallowed up by the other.
I know that this is all going to take time. At what point do local communities themselves actually start to feed in terms of the kind of services they're after locally? When does that feed into a locality plan?
Maybe I'll just set out a little bit about the timing and sequencing and then hand over to Martin in terms of the thinking about prototypes and timeframes around locality planning through the sort of the first interim Health New Zealand plan. But just to give listeners some context, the next 9 months between now and July, You mentioned at the outset, Barbara, the legislation. We've just had board announcements. What we will be doing as a transition unit, as we've geared up, you mentioned the health plan, the charter, some of the prototype work. So we'll look to move some of that work into Health New Zealand, establishing Health New Zealand, once we can sit and work through timing and sequencing with the board. And then there will also be the transfer of some of the ministry functions over the course of early part of next calendar year, in order to allow Health NZ to, in essence, gear up to take on the responsibilities it needs to do, and in order to then, I guess, go ready on sort of day one as district health boards and staff of district health boards transfer into Health NZ. So that next 9 months is really one of creation of functions, transfer of functions, putting in place some of the leadership arrangements, some of which might be interim, in order for Health NZ to undertake the role. We mentioned the health plan. That's an important document that we will look to have a two-year health plan, and that will set out some of the very points that you make. So Martin, you just might want to talk a little bit more about how that planning is envisaged. It will definitely be under the auspices of Health NZ in consultation with the Māori Health Authority. But just in terms of timing, Martin?
Thank you. And I'll come back to the locality prototypes, Barbara. But so the New Zealand Health Plan, we've actually been recruiting through an EOI exercise people to work on the interim New Zealand Health Plan, and they're now coming on board. So over the next month or so, we're setting up some expert working groups, and they will give us advice in a number of areas around rural health, around primary care, around how we can better integrate services in the early years, maternity and well child and related services, and around mental health and addictions and services for older people in a number of areas. Also focusing on hospital specialist services, planned care and unplanned care, and how we can make better use of our available workforce to create national services, many of them over a number of sites. So the health plan process is kicking off in earnest over the next month with the pulling together of these working groups and folk to work with them. And they will be gathering information around what we already know is some of the key challenges in those areas, and what some of the key opportunities are to achieve the big shifts that were signalled in the cabinet paper. That plan is then going to surface and be available publicly, timing to be confirmed, but around about March, April next year, so that people can have a good chance to comment on it and consider the draft and so on, and then go through to the newly appointed agencies as they become established in law from 1 July 2022, so Health New Zealand and the Māori Health Authority. That health plan process is a really important part of the new arrangements and gives everyone the opportunity to feed into what does the plan look like for New Zealand Health over the next few years, which is a first really for us. And it will be a first go at it. You know, it probably won't be perfect and it won't be as in-depth as we would like in future plans, but I think it will signal the key shifts and key opportunities in the new system. And then just going back to locality prototypes, the timing for that, we've had a really good response to request for information about what's currently happening around New Zealand, getting a good picture of that and doing follow-up interviews. We're then going to be briefing the newly appointed boards, Māori Health Authority and Health NZ, towards the end of October on what's already happening out there, what are the suggested criteria for choosing prototypes, and also at the same time, therefore, what areas we suggest we focus on. We will then go back to those areas and ask them to come back with some specific proposals to be locality prototypes. And those will include then what's the process for community input and what can we learn from community input in this area? What about consumer input? But also iwi, you know, mana whenua input into priorities, and, you know, how do we work together with local councils to address some of the more determinants of health? How do we take action both in integrating health service provision, but also getting ahead of, you know, the environmental, behavioural and socioeconomic determinants of health? It will happen then November, December, and then we hope to get going with those prototypes early next year.
November, December, we'll hear.
November, December, we'll be asking the specific areas and communities and providers to come back to us with how they would like to see themselves as a prototype.
While we're down at the locality area, How is work progressing with the iwi Māori partnership boards?
So we've had a range of hui that the Hauora Māori team have been leading, and that work has included some joint work with the ministry around almost an assessment of readiness or capability assessment in terms of what are going to be some of the new capabilities and features that iwi Māori partnership boards will have in the system. And this work will become part of the New Zealand Health Plan. How they will evolve, how they will work with localities will be outlined as part of that health plan for the first 2 years.
It just occurred to me from my preamble, is it a problem that we haven't really established what's happening with disability services? Is that a problem for this early work for the localities?
The machinery government work will include advice back to ministers around the future placement of disability support services that are within the ministry. I think the critical point here is, regardless of the outcome of that work, the health system's response to people with disabilities has to be a key priority in the architecture and, you know, the prioritisation and service delivery models into the future. And so how the health system's response to people with disabilities occurs will be very much a priority within the system. The outcomes of the government, the cross-government work in relation to disabilities is yet to be announced. But from our perspective and the discussions we've been having with the disability sector over the planning period, they've been very supportive of the approach in terms of almost drawing a distinction between disability support function and where it may end up versus the need for the health system to better respond to people with disabilities. And that's the avenue we're tracking on with at the moment.
Okay. And part of that will include ensuring we have a disability perspective in the New Zealand Health Plan. The health services for people with disabilities needs to take account of their specific requirements.
Mm. So were you excited by the submissions you got on the prototypes?
I was actually surprised how much work is already going on, and it's pepper-potted around New Zealand. There are things happening in particular areas that have actually got a lot to contribute if we can scale them up. You know, we've got places that have got amazing relationships with local iwi, with social service providers, and are driving an integrated approach to health and social care. And we've got places that have done really good community action, and got some places where they've done some joining up of health services, but they're all in little bits. So it's a real opportunity to scale those things and create a learning environment that, you know, people can learn from each other, and we can piggyback on each other and spread the knowledge across New Zealand. So I think it's going to be great, actually. It's one of the really nice initiatives out of the whole plan.
So you're getting a very excited Martin Heffert here, Barbara. But I think that last point is a really, really important one, that, you know, this opportunity to, and it's a very strong theme that we've had come back in our engagement, to create this learning system, whether it's within primary care, community-based care, and some of the intersectoral initiatives, or indeed within specialist care within our hospitals, is that, you know, we don't share this as well as we could through the system. We don't transfer knowledge and innovation as well as we perhaps can. And, you know, organizational barriers are sometimes an impediment to that. So being able to reach in to understand and to share back with the system has to be a key opportunity that that this reform provides. And as we've engaged with workers within the system, it's something that keeps coming up, is that, you know, this isn't a centralized bureaucracy. This is a distributed system from locality through to at a national level, and embracing locality innovation that can be shared back across the system has to be a key priority.
And I totally agree with that. And I think that the localities are at the heart of these reforms, because that is right down at the community level. And we have to have the community completely on board and engaged with our health system for it to work. So in some ways, I've thought, well, the localities are quite ephemeral at this stage, but maybe that's a good thing. As you say, lots of ideas are coming in and opportunities. Perhaps one of the harder aspects of this is that although we say that it's not a centralized system, It's taking people who have worked in a system which has actually been relatively secondary driven or maybe further removed from communities. So how do you take people from a system like that and encourage them to make use of the opportunities at localities? What qualities are you looking for in leadership in this new system?
Well, many. I think people have been very used to an operating model or a system for the last 20 years. And we need to take a bit of time to think about the opportunity that this new system provides. But some of the qualities that, you know, are essential, first and foremost, we need to be serious and committed to the aspiration and the vision that these reforms offer. If we start to tinker and to, you know, cut across it, then some of that opportunity will be lost. So for me, the leadership of the system and people who work in the system need to be absolutely committed to what we mean by equity, what we mean to, you know, that it is not good enough, that the outcomes that we've historically been getting continue. We need to do better for people who need healthcare and support to improve health outcomes. We shouldn't be satisfied to see trend lines just stay static. We need to be inquisitive. We need to challenge. We need to be willing to reprioritize in order to try and do things better, whether that's the commissioning function, the delivery function. We have an environment where health is relatively slow to embrace digital technologies compared to other sectors, whether consumer sector or banking sector and so on. And we know consumers like to access digital technologies. Not everyone, but actually the majority do for some things. And that's a real opportunity that we haven't really embraced. And we need to be more embracing of that. So yeah, we'll take, you know, a focus on equity, a focus on being prepared to challenge. You know, I mentioned being very inquisitive around variation and performance. We need to be open in respect to where things aren't comparing as well as other parts of the system. And we need to learn and adopt what may be happening for the betterment of patients at that locality.
Do you think it'll be easier for people in the system to be less risk averse than they are now?
Yeah, I think we need to try some stuff. This stuff is hard. You know, a Māori health commissioning function was an important mechanism to bring about some innovation into a commissioning environment to try new models of care, new ways of working at perhaps a locality or district level with other intersectoral partners that perhaps we haven't been able to try in the past. So yeah, we need innovation in a number of areas, but we also need to be accepting that if we aren't getting the outcomes we achieve through some of our current contracts, then we need to revisit that. We need to commission in a different way or try things differently. You know, we owe that to the taxpayers of New Zealand.
Now, speaking of which, to what extent does the funding model sit like a little devil on your shoulder as you look at all these potential opportunities and wonder about, you know, trying new things? There are costs attached to this. How much do you need to take into account the funding?
Yeah, we do. But there's also a cost of inaction. And so, yeah, funding is important. And the historic model is, you know, simply not really fit for purpose, where we have an allocative model that adjusts for ethnicity and deprivation at the macro level. But we know that the significant proportion of that goes on to specialist care. So at the macro level, if we're really going to protect and invest in prevention and primary care and community-based care and public health, then some of our structures for allocation, our appropriations and how the funding is allocated needs to change over time. So they'll be important decisions as part of the overall, I guess, operating context of this new reform agenda. So yeah, I mean, funding is important, but you know, there is a cost for the outcomes and some of the negative outcomes that we're currently seeing on the system right now. And you know, I've always talked about the cost of $5,000 to $6,000 per average hospital discharge versus the cost through capitation or pharmaceutical cost for the average primary care visit. It's, you know, it's significant. And unplanned admissions to hospital are clearly an opportunity lost for the system. So we need to do better there.
Barbara, on the leadership question, there's another point. In other health systems, they really invest in their leadership and have national programs to develop leaders and grow their leaders. And as we bring the DHBs and other bits of the health system together, there's an opportunity for us to develop those leadership programs so that we can grow the leadership qualities that are important for the health system of the future in a way that we haven't done that investment in the past. Mm.
The other competencies we're going to need, whether it's a more digital savvy workforce or the commissioning capability that will be required in the new system, there are a range of additional capabilities that we're going to need in a contemporary New Zealand health system. Equally, the opportunity to look at, again, a future workforce planning with a single view across the whole system and to work with our tertiary education providers around that future pipeline, is something that we can do at scale for the benefit of the whole system, which really just hasn't occurred in the last, in the last 20 years with the current model.
The pandemic certainly hasn't helped, but you've been boss of the health system before. Morale in the system at the moment is not at its highest. And everyone agrees that change is needed. That's not an issue. But actually convincing people that if they get on board with this, it's going to make a difference. Is that something you need to have a strategy for? Presumably that's what the Health NZ, one of their first jobs will be once they come on board.
Yeah, in terms of the engagement that we've had with unions, with stakeholder groups, with colleges, peak bodies, and interaction on the ground, people are really supportive. They want to understand the detail. But when you talk through what's intended, everyone acknowledges that it makes sense. And so there is general support that is often impacted by the day-to-day demands of a system under huge pressure. And the last 18 months and what we're seeing at the moment, it's under massive pressure. But we're also getting the call out that a reminder that actually we're reforming to create a better health system over time. And particularly Māori and Pacifica are almost demanding that the reform agenda continue at pace. And there was a bit of a challenge around we can't reform and do and deliver it today, but people are saying actually we need to reform because of what we're seeing today. And so that's an important message that's coming back to us with much of our interactions with people who work in the sector.
And certainly the pandemic has provided opportunity for Māori and Pacifica providers to show that they can do things differently and well.
Absolutely. We talked the other day with, I think it was the directors of nursing, and this was at the height of the outbreak of a few weeks ago. And we had 19 of the 20 dial in, and I take that as a good result. And these are leaders of the nursing profession within district health boards. It was overwhelming to hear, their support for what they were saying, a once in a generation reform and commitment to, working on this agenda moving forward. And, there are many interactions like that every week, and that's incredibly heartening.
So do you ever find yourselves kind of hitting your head against a brick wall when you think about the fact that no matter how successful the reforms are, the health system only accounts for 20% of health and wellbeing outcomes? How do you engage with the other sectors that impact on our health and wellbeing?
Health does make a significant contribution, and it's at the trust and confidence in the health system is something that we all want. Your point around how health works with other sectors is critically important. Martin's got some good examples of what can happen at a locality level. As we have been working as a transition unit, we've had Te Puna Kokiri staff working as part of our program of work. Clearly, how we interact with Whānau Ora Commissioning, for example, on the ground is critically important. Other cross-agency interaction. We've recently spent time with the New Zealand Police, with Andy Costa and his senior leadership team, who are really embracing of the locality strategy because, often police are the only 24/7 service in communities and they see and hear what's happening. So having the police involved around, at-risk populations or vulnerable populations as part of the locality strategy and being huge embracing of this, including support for some of the mental health change, is critically important. So government agencies have been hugely supportive and keen to embrace the sort of broader commissioning focus that we can bring to localities.
I had the observation made to us, Barbara, that currently, health is one of the hardest ones to get around the table making its contribution. And so I think while we recognise health can't be everything, it can make its contribution more strongly and partner with the other agencies. And I know that, as Stephen said, that many of them are looking forward to having a more cohesive system to partner with.
I just recall from the Cabinet paper, Andrew Little talking about the need to ensure that the Māori Health Authority, the Health NZ and the Ministry of Health work together well. We've had a previous structure where we had health funding authorities in the Ministry of Health and we had the National Health Board. I'm just wondering, that's another kind of culture issue in terms of how we do have centralised agencies working well together that potentially see themselves also slightly in a competitive basis, whether it's in terms of how they ultimately perform in the face of the minister or the politicians. Any thoughts on how you manage those interactions?
Yeah, I think there is some key differences between some of the constructs of the past versus what we have available to us today, and the intention of this reform very much around a one system ethos. You know, the legislation will be requiring of some things. We have a government policy statement or other levers that can set out expectations. We've mentioned the health plan, which will in essence bind the Māori Health Authority and Health New Zealand over a multi-year period, for example. You know, there are mechanisms that can be used at national level around how you work together, monitor, review progress against whether it's health plan or strategies that you would expect the agencies to work together on. So clarity around role and function is really important. And let's name and understand some of the challenges of previous models and ensure that the leadership of the system for tomorrow, you know, is incentivized to not reproduce some of those behaviors or challenges that we had historically.
Again, in the preamble, I did talk about the structures for the public health services. And in the past, I know back in the 90s reforms, there was a proposal to set up a separate public health agency, which never went through, and the regional services stayed regional. Is there still a tension around the placing of the public health agency in the Ministry of Health and the public health services actually out in Health NZ?
I haven't noticed any tension, not at all. And we're working really well with the ministry in relation to, you know, that public health, I guess, call it design. You mentioned Simon Everett with Simon and have been working with Ashley. I think the positive here is the importance of public health within the system. Clearly, we've seen the events, pandemic, but, you know, so much else of public health to address some of the underlying, you know, drivers and determinants of ill health. So some expert advisory committee and expertise to inform the public health agency within the ministry. And I think that the business unit there, the key message there for me is the recognition to enhance the public health function and how that can support the stewardship role of the ministry, which is about looking at the long-term challenges that we face as a population and as a country. So public health naturally fits within that model. And then what we've talked about in respect to the National Public Health Service within Health New Zealand, and, you know, this creation of a one system ethos, while the Director of Public Health might be within the public health agency, our view was, why shouldn't that person, you know, Carolyn McElnay currently, why shouldn't that person still be on the leadership team of the National Public Health Service within Health NZ, you know? And let's do that straight away. So, you know, there are many things you can do to reinforce this one system ethos as opposed to try and put boundaries around entities and silos. And that for me is just a really good example. You know, why wouldn't we keep the health promotion capability that the agency has now rather than break it up too much, keep some of that critical mass and transfer it in as part of, you know, a National Public Health Service, for example. And so those arrangements between, say, the Public Health Agency and the National Public Health Service need to be pretty seamless.
Mm. I know you guys are apolitical, but I'm just wondering the extent to which you've been able to engage with all the MPs in terms of these changes, because obviously if we had a bipartisan approach to change, it would be useful for long-term planning. Any thoughts?
Yeah, and I think one of those key opportunities is obviously going to be through select committee processes. you know, having been around the system for a long time, Barbara, many of the features of what we've been talking about, you know, I go back to the mid-2000s and we had the long-term system framework and we were calling at that time the need to get decision rights right at the system. You know, what should be national, what should be regional, what should be local? And here we are today talking about a distributed system and the optimal placement of functions. So, you know, we need to be real that there are some things we should just do once in a country of 5 million people. Equally, we need to recognize that the health needs of the people in Kaikohe might be different to the frail elderly population on the North Shore of Auckland, and we need a level of local tailoring. And so this model allows for that. My point is that many of the features that are being built into the system have been part of reviews, arrangements that have, you know, been in discussion and debate across the system for some time.
In general, the system as proposed, it's all about outcomes. In theory, it should be agnostic as to how those outcomes are achieved. I'm going to my question with regard to general practice, and that still remains the fact that general practice ownership models pop up often as a negative in the health system. I kind of feel that the issue isn't really who provides or how it's provided, it's actually whether it meets the outcomes required. And what are your thoughts on that?
Certainly, in terms of what we're proposing around an enhanced commissioner model, you know, smart commissioning will be focused on backing and supporting providers who will deliver on the outcomes and the aspiration that the reform agenda holds. And are laid clear in those opening outcomes, Piora, equity, sustainability, and seeing some shifts where we just haven't seen shift before. That's why we need to bring innovation into some of the commissioning function. But we need to test and try, and we need to back, and we need to be flexible enough to, you know, to shift resources and money where we've got providers who are delivering on outcomes that best align with that vision.
Martin, this might be a question for you, but I just wonder if one of the barriers there has often been the perception that because some providers, and not just GPs, there's other providers who are private, like midwives and physiotherapists, you know, a whole pile of allied health professionals who work in the community. It comes to that point where whether they've been engaging with a district health board, for instance, and someone decides to what extent they should be paying for being involved in a system or paying for training or meeting the costs of after-hours work. There's these kind of barriers that suddenly go up for them being part of the overall system.
And some of those need specific solutions, but I think the overall kind of thrust and philosophy is to say, whether you work for a private GP or whether you're a self-employed physiotherapist or a pharmacist or whatever you might be, or whether you're a nurse in a public hospital ward, you're part of Health New Zealand. And that's one of the drivers behind having a single health plan and having a single health charter to say that we're all about improving the health and well-being of New Zealand. It's a common goal, and we're all part of one system that does that. And yes, some people get paid by the government and, you know, on salary, and some people are self-employed and some people are on contract. It doesn't really matter that much. They all became health professionals to try and improve and make a difference in the life of their patients.
Okay, on that note, I think it's time for the System Fix quiz. Rightio, so this week's System Fix quiz, we've got three questions. First question. We've got a new website called futureofhealth.govt.nz. How many updates from the transition unit have been posted on that website?
Do you have multiple choice for us out of that, Barbara?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I'd say 3.
I'd say 5.
Well done, Martin. Well done. Okay. Those updates are useful, keeping us up to date with the work that you've been doing. So, yeah, keep them up. Question number 2. What are the 4 key words summing up the aim of the health sector transformations?
Equity.
Excellence.
Sustainability.
Tiriti.
Sorry, I'm just going to put you out of your misery. It's like equitable, accessible, cohesive, and people-centred. But all those other words were good as well. My last question, which actually I just want each of you to answer in one sentence, if you can, 2 sentences is fine. Just thinking about the questions that people come to you when you go to your meetings and interact, consult, all the rest of it. Stephen, what is the most frequently asked question about the reforms that you get?
The most frequently asked would be, what will be different for me? And followed by, will we be serious about equity this time? Or something of that nature.
Okay.
Now, are we going to be true to our word and truly deliver on this? And that's coming from all stakeholders.
And Martin?
Yeah, I would say that the most frequently asked question I get is, when is it going to happen on the ground? You know, when are we actually going to see some changes where we work or live or the services we access, et cetera? People want to get beyond the institutional changes, which I understand, to, you know, making a difference for people who are using services and providing services as well. It's from the workforce as well as from patients.
That's probably a harder question than the one that Stephen gets, because Stephen, you can assure them that you believe that, yes, you are going to deliver on those promises. But for you, Martin, that question, that timeliness, when will I see a difference? Okay. That's a hard one, isn't it, I suppose? Not just because we have a pandemic, but also because there's a lot of work ahead. But what answer do you give them?
Well, I do say it's going to take some time to change things. But, you know, journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Yeah.
And time isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, as you, no doubt, in many of these documents mentioned, we do want to get it right. Stephen, any final thoughts?
The comment about equity is that there is genuine anticipation, and I would say, you know, almost excitement in many quarters. But there's also a level of skepticism around, will we be bold enough on this transformation journey? Will we hold to the aspiration to really make some of the shifts that will make this possible? And for me, whatever happens over the course of this next 3 to 5 years, we need the leaders of the system of tomorrow to hold true to that test, whether they're allocating funding, whether they're delivering services, whether they're evaluating services and making difficult decisions around reprioritization. We must hold true to those core principles and the outcomes that we're looking to achieve.
But it's not just about those future leaders. It's about the entire country, really. Yeah. I mean, this is an amazing transformation if we can make it work in terms of treaty partnership, you know, achieving equity in health outcomes. I mean, it is a once-in-a-generation change. Thank you so much for joining me, and hopefully we can talk again soon. Thank you for your hard work. Ngā mihi nui.
Go well, Barbara. Thank you.
Thanks.
See ya. And I couldn't help myself. I had to add this little post-note from Martin Hefford.
Yeah. I was hoping we'd get the question about, if this reform was a dog, what sort of dog would it be?
I didn't want to be that mean.
Great Dane, clearly.
I should have asked it, yes. Oh, I can always sub that in, don't worry. Well, actually, I'm going to take you up on that, Martin. I think next time I will ask, the next person I interview, I will ask them what kind of dog it would be. That was a pretty random question I asked of Dave Mates, because I really couldn't, because I only had one person, so no idea what to ask. Thanks for listening to System Fix, brought to you by the Health Media. If you would like to learn more about the health reforms and other issues in primary care, you can subscribe to New Zealand Doctor, Rāte Aotearoa, on nzdoctor.co.nz. Or to keep up with issues in the pharmacy sector, go to pharmacytoday.co.nz. Both publications now offer monthly subscriptions. Thank you to Steve Hart for post-production work on System Fix. This is Barbara signing off. Until next time. Thanks for listening. Ngā mihi nui.